Support for this public radio podcast comes from the Society for Human Resource Management, which also sponsors PBS's CEO Exchange, online at shrm.org.
Showdown in the Senate.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. No big economic surprises in the State of the Union last night. The president laid out his plan for jump-starting the economy with tax rebates. The House is already on board. But it goes to the Senate tomorrow, where things could get tricky. Senators are talking about expanding the plan. One suggestion, $5 billion for road resurfacing projects. That would create a couple hundred thousand jobs. And possibly more unemployment benefits, even tax rebates for millionaires. We'll see if any of that gets added in. One thing the president made clear he does not want, more pet projects, otherwise known as earmarks, otherwise known as pork. Steve Henn has more.
In the first few minutes of President Bush's speech last night, he set out his plan to wean Washington, D.C. off its penchant for pork.
If you send me an appropriations bill that does not cut the number and cost of earmarks in half, I'll send it back to you with my veto.
But Steve Ellis at Taxpayers for Common Sense was unimpressed.
My view, cynically, is here's an opportunity where we can look like we're doing something without really doing anything.
Ellis and other advocates of earmark reform were hoping Bush would use an executive order to wipe away most of this year's $17 billion in earmarks, few of which were formally voted on by Congress. Bush will sign a similar order later today, but it will only apply to future earmarks.
Then we'll leave the bag for the next person in the White House.
And that, according to Ellis, will give congressional appropriators plenty of time to figure out how to protect their beloved pork. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
Wall Street's rally yesterday has carried over to the world markets today. In Tokyo, stocks gained about 3%. Other Asian markets added 0.5%. European shares are up about 1% so far. Gold prices hit a new record at $930 an ounce. The Dow gained 176 points to 12,383. The NASDAQ and the S&P 500 both added 23 points. Americans plan to spend $10 billion getting ready for the Super Bowl this Sunday. New TV sets and furniture, and of course, 50 million pounds of avocados. You got to have guacamole, right? Last year at this time, the U.S. lifted a ban on Mexican avocados. We decided to check in on how U.S. growers have fared since then. Dan Gretsch reports from our America's desk at WLRN.
Trade is usually thought of as a zero-sum game. If Mexico ships more products into the U.S., then U.S. producers are hurt. Avocados, it turns out, are different. A year ago, the USDA lifted a 93-year-old ban on avocado exports to avocado-producing states. The result?
The outlook is still very good for all the parties involved.
That's Guy Whitney with the California Avocado Commission. He says Mexican growers are seen as partners, not competitors. That's because Mexico's growing season ends when the U.S. season begins, stoking demand year-round.
Because of the seasonality of the fruit, right now there is adequate space for everybody in the U.S. domestic market. Not to say that that's going to be the case forever.
Whitney says Peru has an avocado growing season that mirrors the U.S., and the South American nation is lobbying hard to enter the U.S. market. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by the Medtronic Foundation, partnering with more than 70 national patient organizations to educate and support patients and their families. Online at Medtronic.com. And by Shriners Hospitals for Children, providing treatment for orthopedic, burn, and spinal cord injuries at no cost to the families. More at ShrinersForKids.org. Sustainability coverage is supported in part by the Candida Sustainability Fund of the Tides Foundation, furthering values that contribute to a healthy planet.
A study out today suggests what a candidate looks like has a lot to do with their chances of getting elected. Researchers studied the effectiveness of branding and advertising in 112 congressional elections. They found that Republicans who had the most success appeared competent and trustworthy, the high school quarterback stereotype. Democrats preferred candidates who seemed intelligent and likable, more of a college professor type. Marketing professor Michael Lewis led this study at Washington University in St. Louis. So, Michael, do we boil elections down to an appearance contest?
Oh, no, no, no. I mean, you know, we looked at both spending and these appearance variables. And while, you know, what a candidate looks like is important, how much the candidate has to spend to get the message out there is much, much more so important.
So now we're saying that the amount of money that they spend plus the appearance, those two are the most important things.
Yeah, absolutely. And in a way, you know, we found this, sort of viewed this as a positive. Money, and I know a lot of people would think that the money driving political results is kind of unfortunate, but our, you know, our take on it was when there was more money involved and the messages were actually getting out, those effects dwarfed the appearance effects.
Well, what about how the money is spent or who is spending the money?
Well, we actually did find a couple of interesting results there as well. Challengers actually ended up getting a better rate of return in terms of vote share for the amount of money we spent. And perhaps even more strikingly, we found that challengers tended to do better when they engaged in negative advertising, where incumbents actually tended to hurt themselves when they went negative. To sort of put this in marketing terms, if we think about incumbents as established brands that voters or consumers are very aware of, I think there should be a lot of hesitation about going negative.
Mm-hmm. Have you made any immediate connections between what you found and the candidates that are out there on the trail right now?
I mean, we haven't directly assessed the appearance advantages of the presidential contenders at this point. We've had a lot of conversation about it, of course. Let's say this. I mean, on the Republican side, there's one candidate who quickly comes to mind, and that's Mitt Romney.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he looks like the prototypical Republican candidate. On the Democratic side, you know, we've had a lot of discussion about, you know, some of these other traits like likability. And in particular, when we, you know, see how Hillary Clinton is performing on the campaign trail versus Obama, you know, there is something of a likability gap. And so the appearance variables are not the whole story, but they do seem to tell a story that's consistent with what we're seeing play out.
Michael Lewis is a marketing professor at the Business School at Washington University in St. Louis. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.